The franchise tag deadline has come and gone. Tara Roberts of FF Today and Fantasy Pros, many outlets. She joins me to break down the players that were franchise tagged, the players that were not. And then we dive into our free agent matchmaking list. Where's Kirk Cousins going to go? Where's Derrick Henry playing next year? Calvin Ridley, what's the best landing spot for him? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, March 5th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Franchise tag deadline day. And joining me to do just that is Tara Roberts of, well, basically everywhere, Tara. I mean, she contributes to CBS's FFF Today, FF Today, Fantasy Pros, Dynasty Vipers, among many other outlets. Tara, you're absolutely everywhere. But you're here on the show, first time, I believe, on this podcast, and I'm very excited to have you. How's it going?
I'm excited, too. This is wonderful. Perfect day for this. Very excited to talk to you. This is amazing. Thank you for having me.
I mean, again, the pleasure is all mine. And like we said before the show, this is a wonderful program we have for the listeners today because it really doesn't matter at all. And when, before you close your podcast app, before you get out of here, it's going to be a good show because what we're going to do here on the show is we're going to play a little game of free agent matchmaker. Tara and I both picked our favorite landing spots, hypothetical landing spots for the available offensive free agents. And I mean, we're going to kind of decide who's got a better one here. And then ultimately, that is where that player will go. We don't have to do free agency next week. We have made the decisions for all of these players. We've matched them to teams. It's going to be fantastic. And again, none of it matters because none of it will actually come true. But it will be a fun exercise to see where some of these players stand. But Tara, before we do get into that, we have some news to talk about because, as I mentioned, franchise tag deadline has come and gone. These are the players who got the exclusive franchise tag from their teams. That means you can't negotiate with these guys. It is what it is. Justin Madubuike with the Ravens, Antoine Winfield Jr. with the Bucks, Jalen Johnson, cornerback with the Chicago Bears, Josh Allen, not the other Josh Allen, that's disrespectful, just Josh Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars, pass rusher, Michael Pittman from the Colts. Three guys also got the non-exclusive franchise tag. The Panthers and Brian Burns continue their strange little dance as he gets the franchise tag from them. T. Higgins got the non-exclusive franchise tag from the Bengals. And L'Jarius Sneed gets a non-exclusive franchise tag from the Chiefs. They also gave him and his people permission to seek a trade if they can't work out a long-term deal. So, Tara, I throw those eight names out there. What stands out to you in terms of maybe expected, unexpected, or just what's got you going here about the franchise tag players?
Super expected is definitely Michael Pittman Jr. staying with the Colts. I mean, they were pretty forthcoming in terms of saying that the goal is to have him on the team, whether it is by the franchise tag or trying to extend him. They could still do that and take that route with him. But that one is big because that takes him, T. Higgins, and then we had Mike Evans as well. All the big three off of the market. So then things get very interesting with our lower tier receivers. So I'm kind of looking forward to that one. Unexpected here, nothing too unexpected. Maybe the Ravens tagging, just because I'm kind of terrified for them because their entire defense, literally half the defense, is unfortunately hitting free agency. So at least they were able to retain one, but I'm kind of very curious how that's going to work out for them because they have a lot of holes to fill.
I'm with you, Michael Pittman. Although the Colts took it down right to the deadline, and they often do this, they get it pretty close there within an hour of the franchise tag deadline. I expected him to get the tag, and ultimately T. Higgins and even Mike Evans, who we'll talk about here in just a second. I never really expected any of those guys to hit the market. I am curious on your opinion of Michael Pittman as a player, and I mean he's coming off a great year. I've always been a big Michael Pittman fan. I think he is long been, or at least coming into last year, was one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. I think he's a great separator, gets under kind of sold as a guy that creates his own separation. Now, he's not much of a yak threat. He's not much of a downfield threat, or at least he hasn't been unlocked as a downfield threat by any of these quarterbacks he's had the last couple of years. So how much of that is Pittman? How much of that is the offense? How much of that is, again, Gardner Minshew and dead arm Matt Ryan the last couple of years? I tend to think it's more on the quarterbacks, but Tara, in terms of like NFL receivers, where do you kind of stack up Pittman? And do you think the Colts might need to still add another body at that position?
I love every single thing that you said. I am a Michael Pittman stan as well. So we are 100% awesome. In line. Agree with everything that you said there. I mean, he's just so underrated. And with you on the fact that a lot of it comes down to the quarterback situation. I know we talk about a guy like DJ Moore and the quarterback woes that he's gone through throughout his career. But Michael Pittman has been right there with him in terms of the struggles that he's had to go through with quarterbacks that just simply can't get the ball downfield. Even when they added Anthony Richardson and there were concerns about the level of pass volume, my thought there was at least we know he can throw the ball downfield and stay upright. So, you know, assuming things get better for him, I think he is a true wide receiver one. Very underrated. The direction that they need to head, in my opinion, is sticking with him as the wide receiver one. And they've got talent on there. They can add in another wide receiver, but you've also got Alec Pierce, you've got Josh Downs. So there's directions that they could go. I think, you know, pull in another tight end, but ultimately I do continue to see Michael Pittman as the number one target hog in that offense. And he can be a downfield threat. You just got to unlock it with the right consistent quarterback situation.
You look at the last 3 years for Michael Pittman, just yards per reception. And these are, I'm throwing out his rookie year because he wasn't really a true starter yet. 12.3 yards per reception in 2021, 9.3 in 2022, and 10.6 this past year. Now, one of those does kind of stand out as an outlier, the first year. But, and look, Tara, I am not a Carson Wentz guy, okay? I've never been a big Carson Wentz fan. He has dragged down many a wide receivers, in my personal opinion. But what he will do that's different from Matt Ryan and Gardner Minshew is push the ball down the field. So I think Anthony Richardson is going to be a great fantasy quarterback next year. Every fantasy analyst is going to be tripping over themselves to like declare Anthony Richardson is my guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to be happening. I could hear Dalton Del Don saying it from here. OK, like that's going to be the situation. But and I personally thought I saw some good things from Richardson in terms of actual NFL quarterback ability. So I do think there's more kind of good to be mined there with Michael Pittman. I'm excited to see it. I'm glad we're on the same page with Pittman as more of than just kind of like, I just see him typically typecasted as kind of that like possession receiver. And that's probably what he's best at is as the chain mover. But I still think there's a little bit more juice to squeeze out of him as a player. So I'm interested to see if the Colts can work out a long-term deal with him. Cause that I think will be fascinating if they value him as like a $21-22 million type of receiver, or if they think he's more in that like 19-18 range.
Agree. They should just go ahead and do it, because best case scenario here, Anthony Richardson comes out and he is everything that we think he is. Michael Pittman has a career year, and then now you're stuck paying top dollar in the new market. Just go ahead and extend him now.
Yeah. Just prediction from you before we move on to a couple re-signings here. T. Higgins with the Bengals in 2024, or is he getting traded at some point?
With it's tough now that they've tagged him. You know, realistically, they can trade him, but the idea of giving up the pick and giving him that massive contract, that combination there, I don't think it's going to happen this year. So I think they're going to give it one more run with Chase and Higgins here.
All right, couple re-signings to hit on. One, you know, maybe slightly bigger than the other. You mentioned it. Mike Evans was retained by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 2-year, $52 million contract. I've already started to hear see some of the cap bros, you know, Brad Spielberger of PFF on Twitter starting to say like, it's a little bit of funny money in this contract. Let's all just remember that as we're heading into free agency. A lot of the contracts that are going to get reported, it's worse than ever. It's all BS. It's not real. So don't get up. Also, it's not your money, people. Don't get up into a tizzy about what these players make. All right. Just don't let your emotional energy be spent on such a fruitless exercise. But anyways, that's the contract for Mike Evans. The Texans also re-signed Dalton Schultz for 3 years, $36 million. Let's start with Mike Evans here, Tara. I mean, to me, just this was a great move for both sides and really what I think needed to happen.
I think so. It was funny that it happened literally right after the combine and after his agent came out making that comment about how, you know, he wants to be paid top dollar. He wants to play for an elite quarterback. And it took literally just a couple of days for him to re-sign with Tampa Bay. But it worked. It worked. Ultimately, I think that's where he wanted to stay. The only other place I could have seen him really going realistically would have been Carolina and reuniting with Dave Canales over there. But this is a great move for the Bucs. The second they released Shaq Barrett, that was kind of the tip off right there, because they had enough cap space to sign Baker without making multiple releases there. Once they did that and went that route, it kind of seemed like they were leaning towards pulling Evans back in. So this is good. Him not having to go to a new location, feeling super comfortable with him.
Yeah, and he gets to be right there with like AJ Brown and DK Metcalf and like that range in terms of APY at wide receivers. Even if this funny is contract is funny money, whatever, he gets to say like, yeah, I'm the fifth, fourth, sixth paid, highest paid receiver in the NFL right now. He deserves that. He's been maybe not an elite wide receiver, but like the very top of tier two for such a long time in the NFL. Like from a reception perception standpoint, he had the highest success rate versus man coverage of his career last year, Tara. Like, I think it was one of his best seasons. And considering the environment that he was in, I think it's even more impressive. And I also, I'm with you that, like, yeah, they can re-sign Baker Mayfield. And if I'm Baker Mayfield, like, the first thing I'm saying to my agents and the Bucks is like, yeah, I'll re-sign with you guys, but like, let's get the Mike Evans deal done first, because I'm not trying to go out there 1 year after my kind of career rebirth season and be throwing to like Trey Palmer and all these guys. Like, you need Big Mike back in the fold. That made all the sense in the world. And I also think the Texans retaining Dalton Schultz is the best thing for him and for all parties involved too. Like, you know, what I don't know where your opinion of Dalton Schultz is as a player. To me, like, yeah, he's fine. He's fine. But, you know, from Dalton Schultz's perspective, this is the best fantasy landing spot he possibly could have had.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are openings, and I know we'll dive into it. There are technically openings where he could have gone, but sticking with CJ Stroud, fantastic situation, and good for him, though, because he, you know, got out of Dallas. There was some, you know, potential contract workings there, signed the 1 year deal with the Texans, bet on himself, and won. So he's got exactly what he wanted now, that nice security, that guaranteed money, and a good situation, good team, good quarterback.
All right, another piece of news here we've got to hit on, and we will do a little matchmaking with this player when we get to the free agent quarterbacks, because Russell Wilson was informed by the Broncos that they are going to release him when the new league year starts. Again, we'll talk about Russ and what he might get and where he might go on the open market in the quarterback section, Tara, but I don't know, just your reaction to the Russell Wilson era, if you could call it an era, in Denver.
Oh, Matt, I love Russ. I love Russ from a personal perspective. He was set up from the get-go here. This was not a good situation. I actually just made a video on this, and the whole, they were targeting Aaron Rodgers from the jump. Russell was the fallback. It was just a bad situation with Nathaniel Hackett from the beginning. Sean Payton just clearly didn't, you know, have any affinity towards Russell Wilson from the beginning. So it's just a bad situation for him. Very little chance of success. And, you know, now Denver's going to foot the bill, and Russ can go play for whatever he wants, wherever he wants. So I think it makes it very interesting.
$85 million in dead cap that the Denver Broncos are going to take on from Russell Wilson, which is, I mean, shatters the previous record, which was Matt Ryan at around $40 million. It doubles that up. I was tweeting back and forth with Jason Fitzgerald of Over the Cap, who said that he wrote the Russell contract extension when it happened in you know, July or whatever, and by the time we got to November of the first year, not even the contract had kicked in, but just his first season in Denver, and he'd already put up a post of like how they can get out of the Russell Wilson contract, when they can get out of it. So it was a doomed marriage. You're 100% right, doomed marriage from the beginning. I don't think anybody can come out of that feeling good. George Payton, the GM, definitely can't. Nathaniel Hackett, the head coach in 2022, obviously cannot. And Russell Wilson doesn't feel too good after this. I'm interested to see where you match him up, because I think I've got a pretty interesting landing spot for him, but I don't know. To me, I don't think Russ is at a point now where you can sell him to a fan base as a clear-cut starter, and I think he needs to kind of come back and prove that, you know, where from a physical standpoint, he's still got it. From just like, can he fit into a normal NFL offense? Can he expand beyond what he was doing last year, which was a lot of like keep the train on the tracks, check down, stuff like that. So I think he's an interesting guy to insert into the free agent quarterback market, but I'm not super bullish on him coming in and clearly being a starter for another team.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've got an interesting landing spot too, and I think it's along those same lines.
All right, last thing here. Jason Kelce retires from the NFL after 13 seasons. Tearful press conference from Jason Kelce, an emotional one you would expect no less from the man. I mean, just shout out to, I just want to include this, because shout out to Jason Kelce, who, one of the all-time great underdog stories, sixth round pick, becomes a Hall of Fame center, you know, first ballot, I don't know, but he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer. He was clearly ready for the podcasting life. He's great at the podcasting life, much better than I am at this whole thing. So shout out to Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce for that. But again, fantastic career. And Tara, I do think like he's the rare offensive lineman that even at this stage of his career, you pluck him off that Eagles offense, even beyond all the tush push stuff. That's a huge loss for that team from a pre-snap, you know, diagnosis perspective, from just getting all the guys on the same page. That's a big kind of loss that the Eagles will have to reckon with this offseason, even if they could probably see it coming the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, how do you replace a Jason Kelce? You don't. You do as best you can, but it's just going to be tough.
All right, let's move into our free agent matchmaking here. We've wasted enough time. Let's talk quarterbacks here, Tara. And we've got a fantastic way to start the quarterback market, because you know how this works. Like, normally there's never any franchise solutions on the open market. So, or again, a guy that you can sell as a starter for multiple years. But there is at least one this year, maybe two, depending on your opinion of Baker Mayfield. So Kirk Cousins, free agent quarterback, Minnesota Vikings. Give me your free agent matchmaking landing spot for Kirk Cousins.
So I was convinced that he was going to stay with Minnesota, but I'm buying into Atlanta as the best landing spot and most realistic possibility for him. I feel like we have to erase everything that we know about Atlanta. We've got to put our bad feelings about Arthur Smith aside and realize that this is just a completely new situation. Anticipate this coaching staff carrying over Sean McVay's offense, which would be a perfect fit for Kirk Cousins. That's why I'm kind of falling in love with this landing spot for him. He thrived under Kevin O'Connell. The offense that Atlanta is going to run this season should run very similarly under that Sean McVay kind of system here. So I really can't imagine a more perfect landing spot for Cousins other than like going to play for Sean McVay himself, which is not going to happen. But I think this is a wonderful situation for him. And, you know, we've seen him under Kevin O'Connell. He's had fantastic years in the past, but I really feel like that, you know, 2023 season, the first, you know, before he got injured, was on pace for truly being his best, you know, career season there. So I would love to see him continue that with Minnesota. And if not, I think he can push right back into it with Atlanta as well.
I am just like you, where I thought he was going back to Minnesota. I think I must have said at some point, because it must have been during Super Bowl week, maybe it was on this podcast, I don't know, that I thought that Kirk Cousins returning to the Vikings was the lock of the offseason, because I'm in the gym the week after the Super Bowl, and I saw like some Twitter account or a couple sites had aggregated me saying that. I was like, oh man, I better just mute the replies on this right now, because it's a week later and I already don't feel that way. I already feel like that was wrong. We're not even through February and I've already gotten something super wrong about the 2024 NFL season. So absolutely fantastic work by me. But I'm with you that I think the Falcons, they were my pick too. I'm buying that talk. I'm buying that it makes a lot of sense. I don't know that, like, Atlanta's a team that can win right now. You know, I'm with you that we have to get rid of some of the feelings that we had about the Falcons of old off our chest. And like, we have to realize that this is a good roster that has some holes. There's certain tweaks that they still need an edge rusher, but that's another great point. That like, if they get Kirk Cousins, they don't have to think about making a desperation play at eighth overall to trade up or something like that. They could take an edge rusher there. I know that we all want the targets to go where we want them to go in Atlanta, but like, they could use another wide receiver. This is a great receiver class. Maybe you get a pairing for Drake London there at the eighth overall pick. Get Kirk Cousins two guys to throw to in that wide receiver room. So I'm with you that I think Kirk Cousins makes too much sense. He's not without risk, right? He's gonna be 36 years old. Achilles tear, like there's complications, but the film was really good. The stats are really good last year as well. So I'll tell you what, if you're like me, Tara, and you have been chasing the upside for Drake London or some of these guys for a couple years, like I'm going to be right back in it. And I hope everybody else is ready for that too.
I am. I was already right back in it even before the Kirk Cousins, you know, rumors. And now with that, I'm just jumping on board. Now I'm bummed we won't really get a discount on him probably. But and I agree with you as well. It'll be interesting. It would be kind of meme worthy if they use that eighth pick on a wide receiver, like back to back to back offensive skill positions. But
that's so true.
But it would be wonderful. Like, can you imagine a Drake London with a Roma Dunsir, maybe even a Malik Nabers? They could, you know, would be amazing.
It would be amazing. Falcons have $31 million in effective cap space right now, according to Over the Cap. That is enough for them to make this work, I think, in the first couple of years. Now, it's not a permanent solution, but I do love the marriage of Kirk Cousins. So we started off chalky. I'll go with the next one here. I'll start off with Baker Mayfield, and I'll admit, I hope you're more interesting than me, Tara, because I was boring and I just sent him back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It makes too much sense to me. It's like, can Baker go and chase the bag somewhere else? Maybe. The Patriots, like, but if you're Baker Mayfield, you've jumped around so much. Why do you want to go and you know, take over the starting quarterback job for the Patriots? Hilariously bad roster. Why wouldn't you just want to go back to the team that you're already starting to build something with in Tampa?
Yeah, no, I'm boring like you. I think it's the Bucs. I've always thought it was going to be the Bucs. It makes too much sense. Mild concerns that Dave Canales is gone, because there's a clear pattern at this point that he rehabs quarterbacks, and he does that very, very well. Yeah. Worried we could see a little bit of a rebound kind of, you know, from Baker Mayfield, like we saw from Geno Smith last year, but still he can give you a fine QB2, and this is the good situation for him. And at the very least, I feel like they at least got a competent offensive coordinator. We're going back to, you know, another Sean McVay system person, but at least I feel comfortable in the direction that the new Bucs offense can head. So they've got Mike Evans. We talked about that. So this one just makes sense for Baker.
All right. We started chalky. We agreed on both of these first two guys. I feel like we are going to part ways here with Russell Wilson. So tell me, where is the dream free agent matchmaking landing spot for one Russell Wilson?
I am predicting we are going to see him replacing Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. I'm buying into it. If we're sticking that route, Minnesota has to do something. They have to get a quarterback situation. They don't have anyone on roster that can push that forward for them. And unfortunately for them, now it's not a giant leap for them to trade up and get a quarterback, but they would have to trade up. The quarterbacks will be gone by the time it gets to them. So they've got a decision to make. And they either trade up for one of the top four, or they decide that they're going to go with, you know, a dark horse guy in Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix, and they sign Russ as a bridge quarterback. So we were kind of talking earlier. I think, you know, him going on to a ready team, Super Bowl contender, we're plugging him in. Like, I don't know if that is the move. I love the idea of him going to a team with strong weapons like Minnesota and providing mentorship for a young quarterback and being the immediate starter as that quarterback develops within the system.
I like that. Because I like Kevin O'Connell. So let me tell you this. If Kevin O'Connell goes out and signs Russell Wilson, like, that's going to pique my interest in, like, what is O'Connell seeing in Russell Wilson that maybe I'm not seeing? From like a fantasy standpoint, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Russell Wilson's throwing them the ball. How much does that, like, move these guys kind of up and down your draft interest rankings?
I think it's fine. I mean, I know we're kind of traumatized by the lack of production that wide receivers had last year with Russell Wilson. But just that might have been the situation and the receivers. I'm just saying, I think these guys can.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy was drafted ahead of Justin Jefferson in 2020, but one of those guys is a much better player than the other.
Yeah. So I think, you know, plugging Russ in here, I don't think there's going to be a big adjustment that we have to make here. You know, maybe you move Jordan Addison down a little bit. TJ Hawkinson, you're already getting a discount on him because of the injury. So I don't think there's a major issue where we'd have to make significant adjustments to the wide receivers.
Okay. I do not have the Vikings as my landing spot for Russ. And I have one that's a little bit weird, but stick with me on this one. I have him going to the New York Giants. Mm. And the biggest reason that I think this makes sense is there has been some reporting, like Rich Eisen, I know, is the one who said that he's hearing they're just done with Daniel Jones in New York. I don't know if I totally buy that because there does seem to, like, they might have buyer's remorse. That's fine. I think they can understandably have buyer's remorse on the contract they gave Daniel Jones last year, but they can't be totally done with him. Okay, like they're kind of stuck with him at least this year from a contract standpoint. And the thing that makes this interesting for me, I think they have to go into next year with some competition for Daniel Jones. Russell can provide that competition and just like, hey, you know, two dogs, one bone, who leaves the cage, right? Like that whole thing. Like, you two guys duke it out in training camp, whoever's better. And the reason I think this is interesting, Tara, is because Russell Wilson's contract, because it's, we talked about that $85 million dead cap stuff, he's going to get paid $39 million from the Denver Broncos this year, no matter what. Anything else he gets from another team offsets that. And because the Giants are so committed financially to Daniel Jones, I think they could talk this out with Russ, like, hey, we'll pay you pretty low salary, but you're still getting paid from the Broncos. So you will enter this year, even financially, if it doesn't look like it on our books, as a guy that can compete with QB1. You can compete with QB1. So for that reason, I don't know that that's going to work out. I don't know that, like, Russell's going to find success on the Giants or anything like that. But that was a spot that I picked simply because the financials, I think, make sense here.
I don't hate it, because then that allows them to use that first round pick on a wide receiver, which they desperately need, because, you know, it's looking like you either got to use that, hope that one of the, you know, top quarterback, hope that a JJ McCarthy falls to you, or use it and trade up, you know, this route with Russell Wilson, and then you can just go ahead and get that wide receiver that you need.
Yeah, which all the dynasty bros are going to hate that. Like, Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers going to the Giants, probably not what we're looking for. But alas, it might be in the cards. All right, Gardner Minshew, next available free agent quarterback I have. I'll be boring again. Maybe you've got something spicier. I have him going back to Indianapolis to back up Anthony Richardson.
I do too. It's boring, but I love Anthony Richardson. Good. I have confidence in him. But, you know, hey, you need to make the smart move, Indianapolis, and have your solid backup plan just in case injuries do persist.
And to be honest with you, Tara, like, I think the way people talk about Gardner Minshew, like how good you think Gardner Minshew is kind of like a do you know ball test. Like, I would have been a little suspicious if you came in here and be like, oh, I think he should go be a starter somewhere else. Like, now, Gardner Minshew is a fine backup. Keep the train on the tracks. He knows that system from working in Philadelphia. Honestly, as a non-Gardner Minshew guy, I was pretty impressed with how he ran that RPO offense. I think he just goes back to Indianapolis. He makes sense as a backup there. Let's talk Ryan Tannehill. I'll give you my landing spot for him. I sent him to Chicago. Again, I think he is a backup quarterback at this point, but a guy that's been around the league. He's already spent time, you know, behind a young quarterback last year in Tennessee. I know that the temptation is to send him to Pittsburgh because of the Arthur Smith connection. I actually don't know what's more uninspiring for a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, if they're just going to go with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph, or if you just like throw Ryan Tannehill in the mix and be like, see, look, we added somebody. I think that actually might inspire me even less. So I didn't do that to Steelers fans. I sent him to Chicago to be Caleb Williams' backup. What about you, Tara?
I took the bait. I'm sending him to Pittsburgh just because I refuse. I refuse to believe. I don't care how much they reaffirm their commitment to Kenny Pickett. I refuse to believe that they will do that. It's just irresponsible to go into the season with that as your only option and your pivot be Mason Rudolph, because you know exactly what will happen. You're literally repeating last year. Is that truly what you want to do? The problem is that I don't think that they're going to draft a quarterback. It's obviously going to be more difficult for them to be able to do so. They can get a, you know, they'll get a late day two guy, maybe a day three, and see what they can do there. But I don't think they will. I think they're going to grab a veteran. Tannehill, you know, makes sense in there. Get in there, you know, push Kenny Pickett, you know, see how that shakes out. I'm so disappointed in the Pittsburgh situation that they have no higher aspirations.
Somebody turn on the notifications for George Pickens' Instagram if it's just Kenny Pickett and Ryan Tannehill. I mean, we're getting a trade request by week five, bare minimum. That's what's happening there. Joe Flacco is the next one we have here. He's obviously a guy coming off a really fun run, but ultimately sort of a failed run from the volatility perspective with the Cleveland Browns. I'm not saying it was a failure from Joe Flacco's standpoint, just like, it was a little bit like we were teetering on the edge of disaster all the time with Joe Flacco because of the interceptions. And finally, we teetered against the Houston Texans in the playoffs. Where are you sending Joe Flacco as a free agent, Tara?
I am sending him back to New York. You're going back to the Jets. Mm. The Jets have to have a stable backup quarterback heading into the season. They've got a lot of things that they have to do in terms of their offensive line and making sure that everything's okay. But you just can't have a repeat of last year. You have to have a backup plan in case Rodgers cannot make it through the season. And it just makes sense to have Flacco go that direction. And if not, another place where I could technically see him going is, you know, it sounds like the Patriots are open to signing a veteran quarterback and, you know, using using that third pick from Marvin Harrison Jr. Oh my gosh, that gives me stress and anxiety. But if that happens and they're looking for a veteran quarterback, maybe they go Flacco and see if they can, you know, use him for a little while and use him as a bridge or development for a younger quarterback.
I could get down with like five. I only want five games, but I could get down with like five games of Joe Flacco throwing YOLO balls to Marvin Harrison. I mean, like just 12 times every game, just throw that thing up there and see if he can go get it. I sent Joe Flacco to a spot where you sent Russell Wilson. I sent him to Minnesota to be the bridge quarterback there too. I am buying a little bit of the JJ McCarthy Minnesota Vikings smoke. I think there is, we'll talk more about draft rumors in our next episode with Jory Epstein on Thursday, but I'm buying a little bit of that smoke right now. I think they seem like they're ready to move on from Cousins. Like they're kind of accepting that and they're kind of looking more towards the future. I think Flacco makes a natural bridge. And I think the biggest reason I like this landing spot is because the ways that Joe Flacco had some success with Kevin Stefanski's offense last year, deep shots off play action, a lot of that I think maps to the Minnesota Vikings offense. And so if McCarthy's not a guy, or whatever rookie it ends up being, isn't a guy they want to throw out in the first month of the season, or they just need a veteran backup, I think Flacco kind of makes sense for them.
Be fun from a fantasy perspective with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Mm.
Yeah, right. Again, all the things I just said, like 10 to 12 targets to Marvin Harrison, just throw that bad boy up there. Yeah. Like Justin Jefferson, for sure. I mean, it'd be fun to watch. It'll be, yeah, from a fantasy perspective, I'll take that. All right, next one up here, Jacoby Brissett. I'll start with this one. I sent him to the Patriots. It's back to the Patriots. It's where he started his career. I like Jacoby Brissett. I can't get out of my head that Jacoby Brissett had the Browns offense as a top 12 offense in EPA per dropback before Deshaun Watson came into the picture in 2022. I can't get that stretch of play out of my head. His like little brief glimpses of really nice moments with the Commanders last year also kind of like fortified that belief. And I just think New England, even if they take a quarterback high, they need to jettison Mac Jones. Like they're done with Bailey Zappe. I think Jacoby gives them like a steady Eddie hand on the controls here. I think this roster needs a lot of help. If I'm them, I'm trying to trade down and just like, yeah, we'll start Jacoby Brissett for a year and see what happens.
That is the exact place that I have him going to. You know, he's confident.
Boom, look at that.
He's a fine backup quarterback. You can plug him in. And, you know, we saw him step in for Sam Howell and obviously immediately produce on the field. So it's fine if they don't go the direction of a quarterback or if they want to, you know, utilize him as a backup as well.
All right. Last free agent here we're going to talk about, unless you have anybody else, Jameis Winston. I'm not a Jameis bro. But Tara, tell me the landing spot that you have for Jameis Winston.
I am a Jameis bro. My funny landing spot would be you send him to Atlanta. The irony of that would be wonderful. But I think I understand that he disobeyed Dennis Allen, but the people of New Orleans love him. Just stay in New Orleans. He's a fantastic backup quarterback. I would love to see YOLO Jameis again. I just don't know that it's going to happen. So keep him where the people want him. They're happy with him there.
Okay, so I said I wasn't a Jameis bro, but I do have a fun landing spot for Jameis. He's going to Denver to play for Sean Payton, who he has experience playing with. Obviously, no more Russ. I honestly don't know what Sean Payton is really like. Why is he coaching the Broncos at this point? Why did he take this job? His $85 million in dead cap from Russell Wilson, a quarterback that I don't care what Sean Payton says. I didn't care what he said a year ago. He never wanted Russell Wilson. That is clear. Exactly. You said that at the top. Never wanted Russ. So why take this job other than money? And look, like Walmart money is good money. Okay. So Sean Payton, he's getting good money. I think that's the big reason. But like, also, is this not just like a weird ego trip for Sean Payton? And all these guys have egos. NFL coaches, they all have egos, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel as if Sean Payton is just going to do some weird stuff at the quarterback position this year because he knows he's not getting fired. So why not just have like a freak show quarterback competition like Jameis Winston? Or shoot, throw Sam Darnold in there. Like, I kind of wish that there's one team every year that's just this bizarro quarterback competition of all these kind of vagabond veterans just like throw three randos into a room and like maybe you start six games, you start five, like, whatever. Just a weird team. Okay. I want the Broncos to be that weird team. I think Sean Payton can kind of lean into that weirdness here a little bit. So I'm sending Jameis to Denver. I'm sending Sam Darnold to Denver. Jared Stidham, you're in the mix too. Let's get weird with Jameis Winston and the Denver Broncos.
I like that. I think, Jameis would win that one out. Jameis Winston and you will assume they're keeping Courtland Sutton. Jameis Winston and Courtland Sutton. Yeah, I can get behind that. There'll be lots of touchdowns. Mm-hmm.
That's a connection right there. I already see the Jameis Winston and Courtland Sutton highlights there. So yeah, those are two quarterbacks, kind of Jameis Winston and Sam Darnold, who play a lot like each other. So I like that one there. We're obviously not going to talk about Justin Fields here, just based on the way we kind of throw this out. I feel like Fields ends up being the Las Vegas Raiders quarterback, but let's move into the running backs here, Tara. Let's start. And this is a pretty beefy group. So let's start with Saquon Barkley. Where are you sending Saquon Barkley, who it felt like it was reported like four or five times the last week, like the Giants are not going to franchise tag Saquon Barkley. We got it. We knew that was coming. Does he return to New York on a deal? Is he going somewhere else? Tara, you tell me.
He's going somewhere else. The bridge is burned. And for me, it's either the Texans or Dallas. I know that it is financially difficult, but it's Jerry Jones and he loves financial difficulty. I would love to see Saquon Barkley in Dallas. Oh my gosh. I know when we look at that Dallas offense of last year, we see Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, obviously the massive connection, the pass volume was incredible, but they were not a slouch in terms of the run volume that they had. The only issue was that Tony Pollard just wasn't productive with it. He had the second most attempts inside the 20 behind only Christian McCaffrey. The opportunities were there. He just failed to capitalize. If Saquon Barkley got in that offense, and this is the level of opportunity that we've seen 2 years in a row now under McCarthy, I cannot imagine the level of a bounce back season that he would have. Goal line opportunities galore. There would be receiving upside for him. It would be absolutely perfect. And the Cowboys offensive line, you know, people may criticize, and we've got some potential loss there as well. Mm-hmm. But compared to the Giants, it's going to feel like a vacation for him. So Saquon Barkley in Dallas is the ideal location for me.
I dig it. From a fantasy perspective, no doubt it would be a good landing spot for Saquon. I also would think that two revenge games per year against the Giants, that's pretty spicy. And lastly, I would truly love to see Cowboys fans melt down in free agency when they spend big money on Saquon while they also have to think about, like, we got to extend Dak, we got to extend CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons contract coming up. It would be great to just throw that little bit of ire at Cowboys fans. So for that reason alone, I like your landing spot. I'll pitch a different one here. And you mentioned it, Texans is the chalky one. I got somebody else going to the Texans. I'm curious to see if you do as well. I'm sending Saquon to Chicago to play for the Bears. Khalil Herbert, nice back. I don't share the dynasty community's affinity for Roshan Johnson. He's fine, but like Saquon Barkley, I think with the amount of resources that Chicago has, Tara, they've got a ton of cap space. I think they should try to take a receiver in the top 10. Like, let's load this offense up for Caleb Williams. You have a unique opportunity here to get Caleb Williams first overall because the Panthers stink. You also have your first round pick in a receiver rich draft. You got a pretty decent lineman last year in Darnell Wright. You got Jalen Johnson back on the franchise tag. A lot of premium positions. So it's okay if you want to throw some kind of funny money at Saquon Barkley here and just, again, surround Caleb Williams with people to be successful.
I like that. I had them going cheap and sticking it out with their little committee there. I'm with you. There's not a lot to be had there. I hate that because I loved Roshan, but I can admit the opportunity is not what we believed it would be. But I like that. They've got the money to burn. Their defense did get on the right track after they made that trade for Montez Sweat midseason. So investing on the offense there, setting things up nice for, we assume, Caleb Williams, I like that. I like that landing spot.
Yeah, the Bears, even though this doesn't account for Jalen Johnson's franchise tag, they still have $44 million in an effective cap space. So they can throw some money at Saquon Barkley on a two-year deal. I think that would be pretty fun. All right, talking about Josh Jacobs. I think Jacobs is unique in this market, that he's a guy that, my opinion, is kind of still like in the prime of his career. I think he still has some good years left. So where are we sending Josh Jacobs?
I want him to stay in Vegas. If I have to send him somewhere, it will be Houston. But I would like him to stay
in Vegas. That was my landing spot, was yes. Houston.
The thing that makes Josh Jacobs different from Saquon Barkley is that I just think that the bridge is completely burned with Saquon. I don't think that's the case with Josh Jacobs. He's a funny guy, right? Personally. But I don't think that he would be very opposed to coming back. As long as the money is good, he likes the environment. And I think we could see him have a nice bounce back season there. We had the letdown season last year, and it made sense after he came off of that massive, massive workload. You know, historically, the letdown was bound to happen. He can have a nice bounce back there. They get a new quarterback situation. Team goes in the right directions. Opportunities are strong. I would hate that for my Zamir White shares, but it is okay for Josh Jacobs. And I think that would be good. Nice low end RB1 for us if he remains in Vegas.
So I did send him to Houston, and the reason I did, I sent him as opposed to Saquon Barkley, and that's where the rumor mill usually points, is Saquon to Houston. If you look at just their 2022 seasons, these guys, their best seasons, according to Fantasy Points data, Saquon Barkley, 36.8% success rate on zone concept runs, 3.48 yards per carry. Jacobs, meanwhile, now he was great on man gap concepts as well, but 66.3%, the highest of the top 10 rushers that year, 66.3% success rate on zone concept runs. That's obviously what the Texans want. That's why Damian Pierce is not a thing anymore, because he doesn't run that type of system. He doesn't run in that type of scheme well. So I like Jacobs from that angle. And man, I would be very curious where Jacobs would end up from a fantasy standpoint if he was to go down to Houston and join CJ Stroud. All right, Derrick Henry also available in this market. Where is Derrick Henry going in your ideal world, Tara?
Oh, my happy place is Derrick Henry with the Baltimore Ravens. Again, you know, financially, a little bit difficult for them to be out there signing free agents when they have so many other things that they have to address. But, you know, Derrick Henry, he is he's towards the end of his career. He's still a fantastic running back. His workload was reduced. It was still a productive year for pretty much any other running back, but for Derrick Henry, it was a down year. So we know that having heavy volume for him is not the direction that we want to take him. Send him to Baltimore, where they are more than happy to operate in a committee. They lead the league in rush attempts last year, and you know, I know a lot of people think that that's heavy Lamar Jackson, but it's not. It's a good amount, but they're still a top 12 rush attempt team, even if you reduce Lamar Jackson's rushing attempts. It's a fantastic location for him. Goal line opportunities would be absolutely outrageous. Again, they can use a committee there. You can, you know, utilize Justice Hill for now. And then you've got Keaton Mitchell coming back. So it's not going to be a heavy workload. You give him the high upside, the good touches, and you don't have to, you know, put that aggressive workload on him. And for the Ravens, it gives them somebody who has been very reliable throughout their career. They've been traumatized by running backs that simply just can't make it through the season. For the most part, Derrick Henry has been one of the most reliable running backs year after year after year. So I love this landing spot for him. I would love to see him as a Raven.
I also have him going to the Ravens. I can envision him in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. And I like all your points about why it's a great landing spot for him. I just think he's a guy that, like, he weaponizes that run game. He takes it from a run game that's always been good, pretty much no matter who they've thrown back there from a success rate standpoint, even if the fantasy juice hasn't always been there. Like, now we're getting a guy that can take that to the next level. He can weaponize that run game in Baltimore. All right, let's talk Austin Eckler. Where is his dream landing spot besides, you know, hosting the podcast with me again next year? Where is his dream landing spot in fantasy?
I feel like it's tough to get a read on Austin Eckler because he's, you know, he seems open to literally anything. You know, there's a possibility that he could return to LA. We could see him in a different location. The one place that I feel like would be very interesting for him would be the Eagles. Now, you know, they have been very successful recently in taking those cheap running backs and putting them into their system and having a lot of success. So this probably would be a little bit more expensive, but I love it because maybe Eckler sees himself in a situation with Philly where he can take a little bit of a discount there in terms of the money and put himself on a team that is a very, very strong contender. He would be able to operate as the RB1 there. It would be a good fit for him.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. I have the next back here on my list going to the Philadelphia Eagles, so I'll transition right into that. But for Eckler, I have him going to Kansas City. I think he needs to be a complement, probably like a number two or at least a committee player with a strong power back who is kind of, not a featured piece as a receiver. That sounds like Isaiah Pacheco to me. I know he's a fan of Pacheco, and obviously he's seen a lot of the Chiefs over the years. Why would you not want to get in that culture, be a leader? I think he'd be interested in that opportunity, of course. I think he fits the system too. They do run a lot of zone concepts. He's been a better zone runner. Even last year, from a success rate standpoint, he was better on those zone concept runs. So that their ground game has been a little hit or miss just from like a every down success rate standpoint, consistency in Kansas City. They obviously have a guy who can bring explosive plays. I don't think Eckler is necessarily bringing those explosive plays at this point anymore. So to me, I think that makes sense in terms of a guy that he can just fit in a role there. The guy I sent to Philadelphia was Tony Pollard. A little bit boring just because, he's following Kellen Moore, but that's the big reason for me. He has experience in this offense. I think he brings a little bit more to the table than DeAndre Swift. So I sent him to Philadelphia as they just kind of cycle through, reclamation projects and lower tier running backs, as that's what they do at the position.
I guess, how can I phrase this? I have him following up behind Kellen Moore and going to the LA Chargers. I feel like with Tony Pollard, the best we saw him was in a committee. And it's possible that what we saw out of him last year was really truly in coming off of the injury. He did kind of pick up pace a little bit in the second half of the season. But overall, the struggles just kind of indicated to me that the volume just really didn't fit for him. He started off the first couple of games fine, and then everything just went downhill from there. So I kind of see him going back into a committee and having that resurgence to what he was originally in Dallas and how he thrived. And when I'm thinking of a team that will transition into a committee, the LA Chargers. We've got new coaching system coming in. We know that they want to be run heavy. We know they probably want to run a committee. And if Eckler is moving on, they don't have the incumbents there that they can rely on. Hit the draft, sign Tony Pollard, make a nice committee, and he can get back to being that explosive running back at a strong offense.
I like that. I have a different free agent running back going to the Chargers, but I do think that that makes sense from just they seem like a team that obviously wants to run the ball with Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh. We know that's part of that DNA. So I think they take a chance on one of these veteran free agents. But DeAndre Swift, next on the list. Where are we sending DeAndre Swift?
I'm sending DeAndre Swift to Minnesota. This is very dependent on what happens at the quarterback situation there in terms of how they can spend their money. But looking at Minnesota, I love Ty Chandler. So don't get me wrong on there. But I just find it hard to believe that the Vikings go into the season yet again relying on a running back who has not been a lead back. That feels a little bit shaky. They need to add somebody. They probably need to be a little bit cost effective. And I feel like Swift is the guy on the market who gives you the most realistic upside as an RB1. He finally proved that he can be that back with Philadelphia. And he's not going to, make you have to give him that Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, or even like an Austin Eckler contract. You can get him a little bit cheaper there. So it just makes sense for him to transition over to Minnesota, where he could either be in a committee or he can outright earn that lead back role.
I like that. I had him going to Washington as kind of like the lightning to Brian Robinson's thunder. They apparently really think that Brian Robinson is going to have a great season. And I like Brian Robinson, so I'm in on that. But so I sent him there in kind of a complimentary role. Next running back here, J.K. Dobbins, is the guy I picked to go to the Chargers. There's a coaching staff connection there with Greg Roman in that offense. So I sent him to look. I don't think J.K. Dobbins is going to suddenly come in there and be a starter. Obviously there's an injury to get past here. We know that, but again, just a flyer, a reclamation project. Why not go to the Chargers coaching staff? Like I said, with Greg Roman, they'll still draft the back. There's no question, but they need multiple running backs. Josh Kelly's a free agent. Eckler's a free agent. Like we talked about, Isaiah Spiller is the only guy on the roster. So bring a guy in that's been around the block here a little bit and J.K. Dobbins into the room.
I can get on board with that one. I'm on the same mindset with the fact that he's going to go somewhere where he's not going to be a clear lead back, more of a committee situation. And I think that's what the Giants are going to have to transition towards. They're not going to go out and re-sign a big name to replace Saquon. They could have just kept Saquon. So looking at that in the way their offense is going to move forward, quarterback situation, are they rebuilding? What are they going to do? Go cheap at running back and see what you can get out of a guy like J.K. Dobbins. You can either pair him up with a cheap back via the draft, or you can go ahead and get another cheap back in free agency and just kind of build a committee there. And maybe as the season progresses, Dobbins can prove that, you know, he's healthy, he still has it, he can be an RB1, and that's a way for the Giants to get a sneaky back in way into an RB1 that they're not going to have to pay a ton of money towards.
All right, Zach Moss here. I think Zach Moss could be the steal of this group. Not the biggest name, but a guy that's really spicy, a guy that played well in spurts last year. Where are we sending Zach Moss in free agency?
If we don't get Derrick Henry in Baltimore, I want to see Zach Moss in Baltimore. He fits there. He fits that committee. And I agree with you. This is one that could, these former Buffalo running backs could be very interesting in where they go. And I could see him earning a significant role in Baltimore.
I could definitely see that. I had him going to Philadelphia. You know, a guy that like that would be a fun fit. You know, yeah. They're a discount team. They don't want to spend a lot at running back. They lose DeAndre Swift. They ran a ton of zone runs last year, and that was where Zach Moss really shined with this Colts offense. Obviously, there's connective tissue there. I don't know how much you're going to do, like how much are they going to change their run game up under Kellen Moore. That will be interesting to watch, but I think Zach Moss here as the starting running back for the Philadelphia Eagles, he would definitely be he's every zero RB bro's favorite draft pick already if he's the RB1 for the Eagles. All right, last running back. You fought, Tara, to have Devin Singletary on this list. Tell me, where's the best spot for Devin Singletary?
Let's stick in Philadelphia. For the exact same reason that you were saying, I can see him being a sneaky addition to that Philadelphia backfield where they like to, you know, start off the season with, you know, three guys who could theoretically be the RB1, put them out there in the preseason and say, hey, one of you step up and earn it. Devin Singletary is one of those guys who just repeatedly, when given the opportunity, steps up and earns the lead back role. So I just think it would be just very poetic for him to go to Philadelphia and just earn yet another RB1 situation.
All right. Let's move to wide receivers here to finish this off. Before we'll go rapid fire on tight ends, because there's not a lot of really good tight ends in this market after Dalton Schultz re-signed. So wide receivers, start with Calvin Ridley, who is now the consensus wide receiver one on the free agent market after Mike Evans and all these guys have been scooped up or retained by their teams. So Calvin Ridley, Tara, I'll start this one off. I've got him going to the New York Jets. And listen, that Jets team needs receivers bad. I think they need to go to Aaron Rodgers and be like, we don't care about the Alan Lazard stuff. That was a bad contract last year. That's all your fault, buddy. Okay, that is your fault that we got into the Alan Lazard business. We're going to get a professional wide receiver that can actually separate here, and that is Calvin Ridley, who, you know, he was not up to his normal standards last year. You know, he's taken a year off of football. He really struggled with press coverage, wrote about that in his reception perception profile. He really struggled with press, not really struggled, but lower than his career expectation. About 10 percentage points lower than what we'd expect in success rate versus press was Calvin Ridley last year. So not a stone cold disaster, but that was the weakest part of his game. But in New York, he doesn't have to run out there and play X receiver every snap like he did with the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they've got a guy by the name of Garrett Wilson who's a superstar who can play that X receiver position. So this way you can use Ridley outside. You can use him in the slot. You can use Wilson outside. You can use him in the slot. Gives them a lot of positional flexibility here with these two receivers, two guys that can beat man coverage, that can beat zone coverage. I love this pairing. It's actually probably my favorite one that I came up with here. The Jets have, you know, $20 million in cap space right now. They're not super flush with cap resources, but they've got to push this thing all in with Aaron Rodgers coming back this year. Getting a veteran free agent, getting a guy that can verifiably start and give you real receiver reps this year, I think has to be a must. And then you can focus on the offensive line in the draft and build that thing for the future.
I have a different landing spot, but I agree with you 100% that they have to have a wide receiver too there. It just, they have nothing there that can work out. They cannot 100% rely on Garrett Wilson. But for me, I am sending Calvin Ridley to Carolina, and I genuinely think it's going to happen because when I look at Ridley and his motives, he is 100% going to sign with the team where he can get the biggest bag. He is 29. This is it. This contract right here is for him to get that big money. And Carolina is a team that has to have a wide receiver one and does not have that first round pick to go get it. Unfortunately, I feel bad for Carolina, but they have to make a move and grabbing Calvin Ridley. He's the closest thing to a wide receiver one on this market that they can get. It just makes so much sense for him to go there. It's a win-win for him and Carolina.
Well, don't feel too bad for the Panthers because this is a situation of their own making. This is their
David
fault.
Tepper. You're right. I don't feel bad. Yeah, I feel bad for definitely, the fans.
We should feel bad for the fans, but we do not feel bad for the Carolina Panthers and David Tepper. That is for sure. That's the headline of the podcast. Don't feel bad for the Carolina Panthers. I like that landing spot for Calvin Ridley. I think a guy that can separate is a must for Bryce Young as well. So either of those landing spots, I think, would be pretty fun. Marquise Brown, probably the consensus number two receiver on the market. Where's the best landing spot for Marquise Brown?
Oh, if they can swing it, I would love to see Marquise Brown in Kansas City. When I look at Kansas City and the perfect wide receiver for them, I want somebody that plays well off of Rashi Rice's skill set. And I think that is Marquise Brown. And I understand, you know, I've gotten some feedback that, he doesn't make it through a season. He's got injury issues. He doesn't live up to expectations. There's always just something slightly off. But I think that he can find consistency with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in order to take what he has pieced together for like half a season of a wide receiver one and give us a full season of Marquise Brown glory with Patrick Mahomes.
Obviously, any receiver going to Kansas City is a good idea. I've got a receiver lower down the list here going to Kansas City. Marquise Brown would be a nice addition for them. They've had some success with these speed types before. I'm not really sure where I stand with Marquise Brown at this point. Injury issues aside, I think at this point, it's just not really a yak threat. He's not a threat in contested situations, can't really beat press coverage. A lot of the size issues have sort of manifested themselves throughout his course in the NFL. So I struggled with, where's a good spot? I actually think if he's stuck in Arizona, because I think they got the routes right for Marquise Brown. They ran him on a lot of these in-breaking routes against zone coverage, which is really what he's best at. But they did it from the X receiver position, which doesn't really make a lot of sense with Marquise Brown. Well, if you get Marvin Harrison Jr. in there at fourth overall, and then you can use Marquise Brown in ways off the line, you can use him in the slot because Harrison is your X. I think that makes a lot of sense. I honestly kind of like that better than the landing spot I came up with, which was sending him to New England, which they have a lot of money. They need receivers really bad. Strike that from the record. Just go back to Arizona on a 1-year prove it deal. Never mind the New England stuff. That's two very small receivers there in Pop Douglas and Marquise Brown for Jacoby Brissett. All right. Speaking of, you hate that offseason. Giants fans are about to hate their offseason because I've sent them Russell Wilson, and now I'm going to send them Gabe Davis. And this is for nothing else, Tara, than Brian Daboll has already shown that he's a guy willing to go get players that he's familiar with. Matt Breida played for the Bills. He's played for the Giants. Isaiah Hodgins plucked off the Bills practice squad. He played for the Giants now. Maybe Cole Beasley. Played for the Bills, had some time with the Giants last year. Gabe Davis obviously has spent the first 4 years of his career with the Buffalo Bills. The Giants, I think they need to shoot higher at wide receiver than just we signed Gabe Davis. Problem solved. But they do need an outside receiver really bad. And Gabe Davis, he just is what he is. Okay. I think he's been unfairly kind of marginalized because not unfairly, it's his fault. Okay. He is what he is, but the expectations just got way too high for Gabe. He's a vertical threat and he's probably a number three receiver. That's fine. The Giants need help at outside receiver.
That is a good point. They're full of potential at slot. They need to get an outside receiver for sure. I agree with that. I have him landing in Jacksonville, but I'm with you. I think that whatever fan base gets him is going to be disappointed. Gabe is one of those guys where for some reason, everybody just looks at him and they see it's just going to be a bust, a bad situation. And I kind of feel like he could be this year's Christian Kirk, ironically going to the Jags, where he gets that contract and people are like, what? No, there's no way. And he actually ends up proving that he was worthy of it. So playing off of Christian Kirk, it would work out. So in a very Jacksonville thing to do here. So that is my landing spot for Gabe Davis.
So I don't love it, but I will say that the role that they had Calvin Ridley in, which this shows you how I think they really didn't use Calvin Ridley in a great way. The role that they had Calvin Ridley, which is, hey, line up at X receiver and just run a bunch of go routes and comeback routes. Like, that's basically the Gabe Davis route tree. That's the Gabe Davis role. It does not make sense to put a player like Calvin Ridley in the Gabe Davis, you know, Mike Williams type of role, but, you know, Devontae Parker, yeah, that's not really what you should be doing with Calvin Ridley, but like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So I think it gives them the player they're looking for there. And I still think then in this situation, they've lost Ridley. I think they're still looking for a receiver in the draft. This is kind of like they're looking for version 3.0 of the receiver room around Trevor. I love it, honestly, just for like what would Twitter say about the team that signed Christian Kirk for all this money, which I'm with you. He ended up proving the haters wrong. Then they signed Gabe Davis for big money. That would be pretty funny to follow. All right, Tara, talk to me about Curtis Samuel, who I will fully admit he's a pet player of mine. I've always been a fan of Curtis Samuel. I think he could play. Where are we sending Curtis Samuel in free agency?
I'm going back to Kansas City. I'm sending another one to Kansas City. When we look at Kansas City, we got to remember, they're not just filling the Marquez Valdes-Scantling role. Sky Moore hasn't panned out. Kadarius Toney has been an issue. They're going to add multiple receivers, potentially draft one, add one in free agency, maybe two. We're going to see turnover here. And I feel like Curtis Samuel is a guy that will just work with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he works in general, right? He's just a guy that is very reliable and can do a wide variety of things. And I just think that he kind of fits into that Kansas City culture and can be a guy that Patrick Mahomes can actually look to and trust.
I like this. Reliable player when he's on the field. Obviously, there's some injury issues here, but a guy that, like, Curtis Samuel, the thing with him is I think he has gotten pigeonholed and typecasted into this, like, gadgety role in Washington. He can do more than that. He can run those outside routes, which he would do in Kansas City in your scenario here. So I like that. Leave Rashee Rice as kind of that big slot receiver. And he can do some of the goofy design touches stuff that, you know, Andy Reid and Matt Nagy can't help themselves. They have to do those. Well, like, let's give it to a more reliable player in Curtis Samuel than, you know, the Mecole Hardmans or the Kadarius Tonys, you know, Super Bowl champions, two-time Super Bowl champions, those guys. But so all respect given, but, you know, more reliable player than Curtis Samuel. I sent Curtis Samuel to the Houston Texans because I think they do need a receiver three. You know, this is gives him a little bit of Tank Dell insurance too. If Dell is slow coming back, well, hey, you can rely on Curtis Samuel to actually run similar routes that Tank Dell would run from the flanker position, from the slot position, allows Nico Collins to win as the X. And then they're also a team that isn't afraid to use some of those design touches type stuff, which Samuel can fit into here. So he gives CJ Stroud just another option. And if I'm the Texans, I think I'm set long term with receiver one, Nico Collins, receiver two, Tank Dell, but you should stack the deck beyond that. Like, you should continue to add weapons for Stroud so that he never, like, oh, Tank Dell goes down and now we're relying on I don't know. Like, who are we relying on? I think Samuel gives you an option there.
I love that landing spot as well. I know everybody wants the big shiny addition and go three massive receivers deep, but Curtis Samuel fits in perfectly there. So completely agree with you.
Okay, speaking of not shiny and very boring, Odell Beckham, I sent him back to Baltimore. I don't know really where else to put him at this point. Obviously he's kind of in his mercenary era. He clearly liked playing for the Ravens. Why not a reunion with the Ravens on kind of a cheaper deal?
I sent him back somewhere too, but I sent him back to LA. I sent him back to the LA Rams. Yeah, yeah. That's where he can just, you know, hey, he's just a wide receiver three there. You know, they might even be drafting another one. Maybe he's just on a field limited time. Deep threat. They know the exact role that he can fulfill. They're not going to ask a ton of him. He's at that point where they don't need to ask. No team needs to ask a ton of Odell. And it just makes sense him heading back there.
I like that one. And I feel like a sentimentality sort of thing there would be in play between, it feels like Odell always wanted to go back to the Rams, yeah. but you know, it just didn't work out timing wise, financial wise last year. So why not this year? It works out. They're certainly in a better cap situation than the Ravens this year, just in their ability to spend money. So maybe that makes sense. All right. The receiver that I sent to Kansas City, you sent all like Curtis Samuel, Marquise Brown. You sent some exciting players potentially to the Kansas City Chiefs. I sent them Darnell Mooney. And listen, Darnell Mooney is not getting the Roto World headlines. You know, that is not a clicked on headline. Okay. Darnell Mooney lands with the Chiefs. People forget this guy did have 81 catches in his second season with head coach at the time, Matt Nagy, who is now the offensive coordinator with the Kansas City Chiefs. So he kind of gives them that inside outside versatility that they want. He can do some of the goofy design touches things that, like I said, Matt Nagy, Andy Reid, they can't help themselves with those plays. They need to do them. It is in their bones to do that goofy stuff. Darnell Mooney gives them a little bit more of a reliable player than some of these other guys they've relied on recently. I don't know that there's a lot of fantasy juice. It would not be the last thing that they need to do, okay? They need to add receivers in the draft as well. But, like, just get a professional in the room. I think Mooney is a professional wide receiver three.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. I sent Mooney to Arizona, assuming Marquise Brown out.
I like that too.
I would love for him to play off with Marvin Harrison Jr. Cross our fingers, Marvin Harrison Jr.
He makes sense in a lot of the ways I'd like to see Marquise Brown used there. So final receiver on the free agent market, Kendrick Bourne. Did you have a good landing spot for Kendrick Bourne, who was off to a nice start with the Patriots last year, but tore his ACL, and obviously that complicates his free agent bid.
I love Kendrick Bourne. I was so happy that he finally forced Bill Belichick to actually utilize him as a wide receiver one last year. I want to send him to Atlanta. Let's get Kirk Cousins in there. Mm, let's get Kendrick Bourne as either the wide receiver two or three there. Perfect for me.
That works. I sent him another NFC South team. I sent him to Carolina. Again, just another team that needs a professional outside wide receiver who can beat man coverage. That's Kendrick Bourne, provided that he's healthy. You know, again, it is not the only move they need to make at receiver. They'd probably, in my little scenario here, be drafting another one at the top of the second round. You know, maybe a Ladd McConkey, a guy who could separate, a guy who could beat man coverage. Like, that's what they need to focus on, just separators this year. Bourne can give you a little bit of that reliability there at the receiver position. All right, Tara, let's wrap things up with tight ends. And again, I'll just throw all three of these and you tell me if you had an exciting landing spot for any of them, because it is not a sexy group, especially with Dalton Schultz off the market here. Noah Fant, Hunter Henry, Gerald Everett. Any good landing spots you got for these three guys? What a group, by the way.
This is so boring, but I think it is a good landing spot from a fantasy perspective. The landing right back in LA for Gerald Everett. Gerald Everett, I know a lot of people are thinking that we're going to get the Chargers and
Brock LA Bowers. Is in the Chargers or the Rams? Because he's played for both. He's played for both
true.
LA teams.
That's true. The Chargers. I know that we're looking at potentially Brock Bowers in for the Chargers. But I really, really see them not passing up on one of the top receivers there at that pick. It's so tough to do that when you've got Mike Williams likely out. You've got Keenan Allen up there in age, Quentin Johnston, big question mark. So I think the big beneficiary here from them maybe targeting receivers is going to be Gerald Everett staying there in LA, end up being the tight end one yet again in a system that could work out a little bit better for him.
I want you, Tara, and all the listeners out there to emotionally, mentally, and spiritually prepare yourself for the Chargers to trade down from the fifth overall pick or take an offensive lineman, because it's, again, it's Greg Roman. It's Jim Harbaugh. Like, they want to establish a run game. So I know we all have dreams of Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers catching passes from Justin Herbert. But just because I like all my listeners, I don't want you guys to get hurt on draft night when you see, Chargers have traded down and nope, that favorite receiver prospect is not going to be catching passes from old Justin Herbert there. But obviously that would be good from a landing spot perspective, fantasy-wise. I sent Gerald Everett to the Commanders because they got money to burn. I'm not the biggest Gerald Everett fan, but like, they lose Logan Thomas. Him and Cliff Kingsbury's offense will probably be a disaster. Let's see it. Noah Fant, though, I sent to the Bengals. Like, let's just continue that pipeline of like career rehabilitation tight ends with the Cincinnati Bengals. let's throw Noah Fant in there, who does kind of fit the profile, Tara, of a second contract, second team. Well, his would be his third team, but second contract tight end, maybe later breakout athletic type of guy. So the Bengals need help at tight end. Obviously, Irv Smith didn't work out with the in this rehabilitation tour, but it did work for Hayden Hurst the year before. I think it works maybe even better for Noah Fant.
That's true. I like it. I had Noah Fant going to New England, you know, and they've got money to burn. They've, you know, had their struggles in terms of regaining that actual footing that they've had in the past with tight ends being successful and consistent in New England. It's a new era-ish, I think, technically. And Noah Fant could maybe get that resurgence over there in New England.
All right. Unless you've got a burning landing spot for Hunter Henry, I don't. I think that's going to do it for us today, Tara. So appreciate you doing the show. We just sent 30 players to a ton of different spots. We covered a ton on this show. We really appreciate you joining us and doing it. This whole exercise has been awesome. Like I said, none of this is going to matter in 7 days from now, but that's fine. It was a hell of a time to do it here on Tuesday, March 5th. For all the people out there, Tara, who are not familiar with you, not familiar with your fantastic work at all the outlets that you're currently working at, tell the people where they can find you and what you're working on right now.
The best place to find me is on Twitter or X at It's Tara Time, ItsTeraTime. You can find all of my stuff there. I post videos regularly, covering a lot of stuff this off season. I also have a podcast with Player Profiler that goes live on Thursday evenings, every single Thursday evening, if you want to check that out. And you can also find me on YouTube as well. I started my own YouTube channel recently. So lots of places. Best place to catch it all is Twitter.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Make sure you're following her at It's Tara Time. We appreciate you, Tara. Thank you so much for doing this show. Thank you all for listening. We're going to be back on Thursday, back to two shows a week. My life's calmed down, a little less chaotic here. So at least two shows a week going forward. We're going to have Yahoo's own Jory Epstein on the podcast to talk NFL rumors and whispers coming out of the combine and ahead of free agency week. But until then, we're out.